might have been good at doing a filling or be at clinical dentistry in uni, but now in the real world, I'm not good. You know, yes, I may be good compared to other new grads, but I'm not competing against a new grad anymore.
Hello and welcome to the 11th episode of the Dental Head Start podcast. This week, I had a really enjoyable chat with Dr. Johan Choi. Johan is a young guy doing some amazing things in dentistry. If you haven't seen his stuff before, check out at Dr. Johan Choi on Instagram. Johan regularly puts up some amazing work on Instagram that really inspires us. You see this stuff and you wonder how he does it, and we get a good idea of that in this interview today. He's an amazing guy who has done a lot in a really short career. He's already a multiple practice owner. He runs a course with Dr. Bharat Agarwal, and he is partway through an M-Clin dent in fixed and removable prosthodontics. He does all of this while maintaining this social media account and really inspiring a lot of us young clinicians to do great work. As always, we get through a lot in this interview. We learn about Johan's story, what led him into dentistry, and where he's gone since he graduated. We learn about his experience as a new graduate and his first job, and how that left him disillusioned, leading him to buying a practice early in his career. He shares his opinion on CPD and what you should do early on, as well as what you should do in your downtime to help increase your clinical skills. We learn about the course that he's running with Dr. Bharat Agarwal, and he shares some of his tips on both composite and rubber dam, which are the fundamentals that us graduates really need to know. I really enjoyed this chat with Johan and I really appreciate his time. Check him out on Instagram at dr.johanchoi. And of course, if you're enjoying this podcast, we'd appreciate if you share it with a friend, like us on Facebook, follow us on Instagram, and make sure you subscribe in your podcast app. For now, enjoy the chat with Dr. Johan Choi. Have you ever had a complaint made against you? It feels terrible. I had one myself last year. It was a frivolous claim about money in a situation where I'd done nothing wrong, but at the same time, it made me feel terrible. So, of course, I called my insurer, Dental Protection Limited, and they came in to bat straight away. I really appreciated their help. They supported me through it. They helped me construct my responses, and we had a really good outcome. There was no concern at all in the end. As dentists, complaints are inevitable, so you want someone to come in and bat in your corner. DPL did that for me, and I appreciate them and their support for me and their support for the Dental Head Start podcast. Don't forget to renew your membership before June 30. Welcome to the Dental Head Start podcast, Dr. Johan Choi.
Thank you for having me, Dave. It's a pleasure to be here today.
It's really great to interview you, actually. I love talking with people who are young and achieving a lot. And of all the people I know that are achieving a lot, you're someone that is killing it. So you own a couple of practices, you're an exceptional clinician, and you're doing some education as well. And it's all before the age of 30. So congratulations. That's incredible.
Thank you, David. I think the definition of killing it, is a bit subjective. I think, we all think we can be doing a lot better. But I guess what's interesting is for me personally is sharing my story with your listeners, really, because, for me, I've always talked about the concept of smoke and mirrors, how things look so great on the surface, but a lot of people don't realize how much effort, how many sacrifices were involved in getting there. Also, I think, in terms of life on a day-to-day basis, there are a lot of things that go on. So, in terms of social media or on the CV, things look really great. When I talk about myself or, even a lot of my colleagues, we find that it's not all as rosy as it seems. So, I'll be happy to share some of the experiences with you guys today.
That's awesome, because that's something that's really important to me. I think people need to realize that it's not all roses. Even if you're going really well and kicking those goals metaphorically, it still can be a struggle. And we don't just fall into these places that we're at. So, I want to start actually asking a question. What drives you to do what you do, to do so much?
Drive. Look, I that's a question I sort of ask myself a lot of the time, because I think it's a question you really ask yourself when. You know how there are days where you're lacking a little bit of motivation and you need to find out those things that really, drive you. I think for me, it's always been a personal competition with myself. I think the days that I'm feeling down are the days where I feel as I'm not progressing. If I'm not better than yesterday, in particular facets of my life, then those are the days where I feel really bad about myself. I guess, you know, when people say you're your own worst, harshest critic. And I think that is true for myself, I guess, you know, but there are other factors as well. You know, we're all after, professional success, financial freedom, time success, everyone is after, the golden life. But, for me, really, it's being trying to be better than yesterday.
I think that's a really good point. We're all after things like financial freedom and those superficial achievements. But for most people who are pushing it seems to be that personal drive to do one step better. That's something, that's pretty important to me as well. Let's take a massive step back. So tell us about your upbringing, where'd you go to school, all that stuff.
Okay, so it depends how early you want to start, David, but I'm happy to start at the beginning if you want to. So I think you can probably call it a very typical sort of Asian Australian immigration story. You know, my parents had me over in Korea. They thought, they didn't really want me to have that life that they'd been through over there. Very cutthroat society. And so they decided to move me over here to Australia at the age of 8 months old. So I don't really remember my trip over here, but we moved to Brisbane. And, my parents originally came to Australia with, not much money at all. They were working odd jobs at the beginning and, they slowly saved enough to have their own business. So we were very typical, typical middle class. And I guess, people always talk about that American dream. But I think for a lot of Asian Australian immigrants, there is an Australian dream here as well, where they're coming for a better life for the children. They think there are more equal opportunities and, a real chance for their children to be successful. So, I guess following on, growing up in Brisbane, I went to McGregor State School during primary school, and in high school, I went to Brisbane Grammar School, which is my parents sort of work hard to send me there, and I guess it's the very typical story of I guess when Asian parents see the Australian dream for you, it's you're gonna be a doctor.
Yeah,
and I think there are a lot of memes and a lot of funny jokes out there about that, but. I think it really comes down to the fact that it's one of the few fields where in their eyes, they feel as though their Asian child is going to have a fair chance.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's because they want the best for you, of course.
Of course. And I think they sort of think, hey, this is one of those fields where typically Asians, they say, hey, they're going to be good at maths and science. That'll help you get into dentistry or medicine or whatever. And then once you're in, you have a fair chance at sort of being a dentist or a doctor. So for me, look, to be honest, all the way up to high school, even during uni as well, while I was studying dentistry, my goal was always to be a doctor. If you'd asked me in high school, and said, when my careers counselor asked me what I wanted to do, I would say, hey, I want to be a plastic surgeon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ah, so aesthetics was always something you're interested in?
Yeah, so for me, it was always from an early age. It was all about aesthetics. I wanted to be a plastic surgeon, and then I came to a crossroads. I'm sure you went through it as well. But when you put your university admissions through, you come down to a chance. Do I really want to do this, or am I going to study something else? And I guess it was a conversation with a mum that I had where they said, mum sort of said, "Hey, do you want to bust your balls for 20 years?" Become a consultant when you're say, 30, late 30s and you've lost all your good years. Whereas, why don't you become a dentist and, you only have to study for 5 years and you're golden. I think that's how it looks in a lot of parents' eyes. But, only now having graduated, both you and I, we realize that it's not as simple anymore, is it?
Yeah.
So I guess that was my journey through uni. And, so we went through university. Pretty easy life. I think at that stage, it was very, very, very sort of typical story, odd tutoring jobs on the weekends, nearly failed third year because I wasn't very good at oral pathology. I think we all have one of those subjects, right?
For sure. We definitely all do. I'm glad to hear that you also have that struggle at times. I think most listeners would think the same thing.
Yeah. So there were definitely, it's topics I didn't like, pedodontics was one of them. Funny story there. I wasn't a real good attendee at a lot of my pedo lectures. So I hadn't been to a lecture nearly all semester. I rocked up to the exam and I saw a lady standing up at the front, sort of moderating. And I asked the guys, hey, who's that? And they go, hey, that's just the professor who's been lecturing us the whole semester. And I said, oh, okay.
Oh. Glad you didn't say that to her.
Oh no, I didn't. I don't think she recognized me either. So she's probably wondering whether I was in the right exam hall. But look, I think, you know, university is always filled with stories like that, you know, fun little stories that sort of, you know, we get nostalgic about, you know, when we look back. But, you know, I managed to get through. And I guess for me, you know, I guess my story really sort of, you know, getting back to the point is I cruised through uni. And now when I look back on it, I sort of look back and go, maybe I should have, you know, worked a little bit harder. Maybe I should have, you know, tried to learn as much as I can. Because now, you know, once I graduated, you know, when I got thrown into private practice, I was sort of thinking, oh, shit. You know, there's so much I don't know. Hey, maybe I should have gone to that pedo lecture and learned how to control that kid, right, when I've got that crying kid in the chair.
Oh, so true. Yeah. It's a baptism of fire when you come out into private practice and you realize that pretty much every single thing in dentistry you needed to actually know. And yes, a pass exactly, mark right. doesn't quite actually get you prepared enough. But that being said, everyone comes out with that feeling. I think no matter how hard you work and how much you know, it is a baptism of fire and you do get through it at the same time.
And I think it's also with sort of our generation as well, right? We always think, you know, we've always been that sort of, we've been rewarded easily, right? You know, you don't have to do very well for people to give you a pat on the shoulder and say, hey, you did a really good job. And I think we all sort of come out of these, you know, at every stage of our educational careers going, hey, I'm the best at this. I'm so good. And, you know, I think particularly true, I graduated from dentistry thinking I was the best new grad that I'd ever, you know, grace the earth. No, that's a joke. But, you know, I thought I was pretty good.
Yeah. Exactly,
And I'm sure you're the same.
You realize pretty quick where the real standard is, and it's patient care and actually being able to perform that day in, day out and continuing to do good work. And we're going to get a lot into how good your work or what your goals are in your clinical excellence, I guess. Soon, I wanted to jump back. Actually, you said your parents ran a business when you were young. Do you think that them coming over and then working really hard, you know, owning a business, do you think that shaped you? And then, do you think that's why you got into business early and why you have such drive?
Yeah, look, I think it is somewhat related. I think, you know, my experiences of getting into business ownership very quickly are probably more to do with my first job, but I guess. You know, with my parents sort of being self-employed, you know, during, you know, while I was growing up, it did show me the importance of hard work, that, you know, you're not just going to get something for free. So for me, there has always been this sort of, you know, this struggle in terms of, well, you know, if I want to get something, I'll need to work very hard for it. You know, no one's just going to come and hand something to me on a silver platter. So I guess that's a lesson that taught me. To answer your question sort of maybe in a bit more of a roundabout way, the reason why I got into practice ownership so early was more to do with the fact that I hated my first job.
We'll get right into that.
Yeah.
That sounds good. So tell us about your first job.
Okay. So basically, you know, I was a Brisbane boy. You know, if you've ever been to Brisbane is, you know, a small little city. You know, if you've lived in Sydney your whole life, you go back to Brisbane and you sort of go, oh, wow, this is like a country town. But you know, growing up in Brisbane, you know, everyone knows everyone. I had a job there. But in my first year out, basically, I got a job at, and we'll call it the practice that not should be named. And you know, they've got multiple locations in Sydney. But I happened to get a job at the Bondi and Sydney CBD practices. I can judge from your nodding there, David, that you probably know which practice I'm talking about.
I think so.
Well, we'll just call it the practice that must not be named. But so essentially I got a job there, and you know, on paper it sounds like a job that's too good to be true. A new grad, you know, walking into these, you know, lush sort of Bondi CBD locations, you think you're going to have affluent patients, walk in and start doing, you know, comprehensive dentistry from day one. But it wasn't like that. So I think for me it was really about, you know, from day one my practice owner was talking to me about KPIs. You know, you should be grossing this much a day. You know, your recall rate, your retention rate should be XYZ%. You know, and these were the things you have to do. So I was okay with that. I said, well, look, you know, as long as I can maintain and achieve those things in an ethical way, I'll do that. You know, okay. So that for me was not a problem. But I think for me, the real problem came where it was more the practice culture, you know, the practice culture in terms of how staff were treated overall, but mostly so. I don't know if you'll believe this, but I was rostered on to do a day of reception and dental assisting as a fully qualified new grad dentist. because this guy would essentially overhire dentists, and because there wouldn't be enough. And yeah, so he was saying, hey, I'm paying you a salary anyway, so you might as well make yourself worthwhile and pick up the phone. So for me, that was just a bit of a, you know, a bit of a no-no. So I that left me very disillusioned with, you know, being an associate. And then, you know, luckily I got a job at my practice, one of my practices now, in Sydney, Canada Bay Dental. And basically, you know, within sort of 6 months of working there, the practice came up for sale, and I was like, oh crap, I'm going to have to find another job. And so I sort of approached the previous owner and sort of said, hey, you know, I'll just buy the practice off you. I think, you know, it's time for me to be in control of my own destiny now. You know, and I guess that's another discussion we can have a little bit later on. But, you know, practice ownership has been a challenge. I don't think it's all that it's cracked up to be, definitely. Mm-hmm. And I think for your sort of recent grad listeners out there, it's not a simple decision to make. You know, there are so many factors that you just cannot envisage. I think when I look back now, when I talk to my business partner about it as well, we sort of look back and go, gosh, like, we were so naive, like unbelievably naive. If we did not have a little bit of luck on our side, and I'm a big believer in luck as well, because, you know, the luck gives you that extra 2% to push you over. But, you know, if we weren't lucky, I'd probably, you know, be on the street somewhere. You know, so
yeah, it could be completely different
story.
So that's the thing. A lot of people talk about business ownership, and that we don't learn a lot of business any business at university. So you come out and you think, oh, well, dental practice, I can do the dentistry, I may as well just own a practice. And it's a completely different ball game. So it's good to hear you brought that point up. And I'm sure it was a huge learning curve going through that. So with your first job, can you give advice to graduates who are looking for work, or who, you know, are in situations like that? You know, how do you think you found yourself in that position? Did you not see the red flags, or is it just something that people can end up in and have to move on from?
Yeah, so for me, so I think the biggest thing is, you know, I think with that first job, my biggest mistake was probably staying at that job too long. So my main advice to recent grads would be, if you go into a job and, you know, I'm not saying leave at the first hint of a challenge, but if there are things you don't agree with on a professional level or an ethical level, or on a personal level, what I would say is, first, obviously, it's important to sort of go and approach the owner and see if you can come up with some sort of solution. But if things aren't getting better, then I would probably say don't hesitate to leave. Yeah. However, having said that, you know, probably one of the reasons why I had to stay was, you know, I had moved down to Brisbane. I'd bought all this furniture, you know, rent. I'd sign a rental contract for my apartment, you know, that which was about, you know, which was half my salary. So for me, you know, it was just that, you know, that fear of not being able to find a job soon enough for me to support myself. But, you know,
so that's another point I would guess is, you know, when you just get out of uni, you're like, yeah, finally earning money, and you think you just made it, you know, you're earning all this money, it's great, you start spending money, but don't get yourself too committed into a situation where you then are stuck either feeling like you need your patients to say yes to certain treatment, or feeling like, you know, you're stuck in a job that you don't want to be in. Mm-hmm. I see a lot of people, in fact, myself, I bought a car, probably not the best idea, although it has worked out. So it's probably not best to get yourself locked into those things early on, I would guess.
Yeah, I think you want a little bit of financial flexibility if you can. I think, you know, if you can live at home, you know, I think living at home is not a bad idea, or just continuing to live like you did in uni, you know, with minimal financial commitments. I think that's a smart way to go, until you find, you know, a situation where you feel, you know, financially secure, or you've saved a bit of money up in the bank. I guess everyone's a little bit different, but I guess looking back, that's probably my experience now. I think when you look at a job as well, you know, I think, you know, nowadays, talking to a lot of new grads, they sort of say, oh, well, you know, I ask them, what are you looking for in a job? And they say, they just bring up this term mentorship out of, you know, you know, because they've heard, it's a buzzword, isn't it? Like people, they hear this word all the time, and because everyone says, you need a mentor. But, you know, I believe, and this is probably more because I have a tainted experience of being an associate, But I don't believe that true mentorship exists anymore in this day and age, in the true sense.
What do you mean by true mentorship? Do you mean like structured mentorship, like almost a course?
Well, I think, you know, the days where, you know, well, you know, the days where your practice owner is going to schedule a, you know, a meeting with you once or, you know, once a week or a fortnight, sit you down and talk about a topic with you, you know, bail you out of the situations. I think nowadays, because business, you know, private practice has become somewhat business oriented, you are expected to sort of come in and be able to hit the ground running, you know.
Certainly.
Yeah. And I think the concept of mentorship, you know, even talking to friends out there, I don't have many friends who have really had that, you know, that safe, comforting hand of a mentor in their professional lives. So I think that's something that, you know, I think it's something, if you get it, great. But I think there are a lot of other platforms where you can learn and network and make up for the lack of traditional mentoring that probably is available in private practices now. You know, we'll talk about social media and stuff later.
Definitely.
And building up a great network of colleagues. But I think
I couldn't agree more with that. I was just going to say something about mentorship. I think there's two parts to that. One is that you're not going to just fall into a job where you got this structured mentorship. Well, there are some out there. I've heard of them, but there's not many. But if you're looking for a mentor or someone to help you, you need to make it easy for them to help you, and you need to not, I guess rely on them to mentor you as much as you need to facilitate mentorship, in my opinion. So if you're, you know, have questions that you want to ask, make sure they're not ones you can just find out easily, and then ask them in a quick and simple situation when the person's not halfway through their own procedure or day. I think a lot of people just expect it to be handed to them. Like you said, with the way life is nowadays, we kind of expect things to be handed to us. And it's not that way at all. So mentorship isn't just guaranteed.
Yeah, and I think that's a fantastic point, David, because if you know, I think a lot of us sort of say, hey, I'm ready to accept this knowledge. Like, I'm a sponge, but you're not, right? Yeah, because the thing is, I think nowadays, because we see so much dentistry on social media, you know, our standard of what we think dentistry should be is this Instagram, Facebook dentistry, isn't it? You know, David, where people don't really realize how much effort's actually gone into getting that final photograph. But, you know, I think it's sometimes, I think young dentists get into a practice and maybe the owner is willing to mentor you, but potentially they're not doing that sexy work that they're seeing on social media, you know, but they're doing solid dentistry, which is working. It holds up for decades. You know, it may not be the prettiest, but it works. And that's probably the most important mentoring that you can receive. Making sure that your filling or your work is going to function well, it's not going to hurt, and learning how to keep patients happy. Like, that's all you really need to be a successful dentist, don't you think?
It's so true. That is what a successful dentist is. I think a lot of what we see on Facebook, and you know, you're doing that amazing work as well, and incorporating that somehow into private practice. But we need to realize that at the same time, you know, you do teach as well, so you publish some work, so you spend the time to make that perfect. And what patients want, to be honest, let's be absolutely honest, a patient wants it to not hurt, to work for a long time, and to be fairly quick. They don't want to sit in the chair for hours if we can avoid it. So we need to not be delusional. We love dentistry, but our patients don't. Hopefully they love us.
look, you know, just because you've put that little bit of Fisher staining in your composite or your ceramic doesn't mean the patient's going to like it. You know, I've had an instance where a patient has asked me to polish off the stain on a ceramic onlay. So she goes, "What is that poo you've put on my tooth?"
Oh man! And just thinking, this is such beautiful work.
And I'm like, this is the best onlay that I've ever done in my life.
Yeah.
And yet they're going, "You're the shittest dentist in the world because here you are putting poo on my tooth." So
you stained it.
Yeah.
I guess we have to always take a step back and recognize where the patient's goals and our goals, sometimes they're not exactly the same. But in the end, that kind of stuff that you do and that we see and that a lot of us aspire to gives us satisfaction, which gives us happiness in our job. And that is a very important thing. You can't treat people well if you're not, you know, happy in what you're doing at the same time. So it's still actually a very important thing.
Definitely agree.
So in your first couple of years, you struggled particularly with that job and particularly the way they ran that job. And then you ended up at another practice and purchasing that practice. How did that go? Tell us a bit about those years.
Yeah, so essentially in terms of a timeline, I stayed in my first job for close to a year. Yep. And then I bought my practice in my second year. So
yeah,
that was an interesting time. That was a time where the banks were lending money to anyone, you know. So we bought this practice, so myself and my business partner, we bought this practice for about $500,000. We had no deposits saved up, no savings, and BOQ specialist came to the day and said, hey, we'll bankroll the whole thing. Here's a line of credit. Cool. Here's a line of credit while you're at it, yeah?
Yeah.
So,
do you want a car loan with that? Yeah.
So I think for us, it was a time where it could have gone wrong, because, you know, I think nowadays, if you are approaching a bank for a loan for a practice, you know, I think dental, you know, being in the dental field and going through a dental finance does make our ability to borrow money a little bit easier. But I think in those times, it was probably a bit too easy, and it could have gone very wrong, because they probably didn't check our ability to be successful that well. And, you know, fair enough, who can truly predict that?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Did you have, for instance, you know, a business plan, all those extra little bits and pieces put together before you applied for the finance? Or was it kind of like, look, here's a practice that's actually functioning at this level, we just want to buy it?
Yeah. So for in our case, because it was not a squat practice, it was it was an existing, they were more interested in, like, you know, how many patients that the patient had, like what was the turnover, you know, the P&L statement. So those are the figures they were more talking about. I think the thing that helped as well was that I was already working there for about 6 months.
Yep.
So they thought that I would have a much better appreciation of what was going on inside. I think the key lesson out of all of this, despite the fact that I have been lucky, has been this. I think for me personally, I went in and up till now we've talked about the big headed new grad, recent grad associate David who's not willing to learn. You know, I'll be the one to admit it. That was me. Okay, so I was not very open to learning. So I guess, you know, I am very responsible for how my early part of my journey panned out. But, you know,
what mistakes came from that exactly, would you say?
You know, so I think it was probably I closed myself up from learning opportunities and networking and, you know, and getting fully involved. And it's something that I've had to make up for in the last couple of years since then, you know, trying to, you know, and changing myself because, I recognize the error of my ways. But, you know, just taking a step back, I think the main error, I don't know if you can call it an error, but the main thing that I've learned was I went into practice ownership thinking, hey, I am going to be successful because I'm going to have a point of difference. It's another buzzword, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think with sort of young people, you know, like us, we sort of hear these buzzwords, but we don't really know what the specifics are behind that word. You know, we sort of think, hey, this is a cool term to use and I'll spurt it out here and there, but you don't know how to implement that, you know, that concept fully. So for me, it was really going in thinking, hey, you know, I had all these ideas how to make our practice, you know, have all these points of difference and have a patient journey. And I thought, hey, if I implement this within a couple of months, you know, we're going to go from 0 to 100 real quick.
Yeah. And how'd that go?
And life doesn't work that way. It wasn't real quick. Yeah. It's been years. It's been a couple of years and I'm still not where I want to be. But, you know, I think you need to be patient. And I think a lot of us lack patience. We think that we're going to be overnight, you know, sensations. But, you know, unfortunately, I think for most of us, the world just doesn't work that way.
Yeah, it's that story of overnight success that took 20 years to build. You know, if we're only a couple of years out, we haven't actually got that experience and time, and, you know, it's not possible really. Mm. You say you clearly are still achieving quite well in the practice side, the business side of things as well. And you said from the start you did try to have like a patient journey and all this stuff. It's a bit of a buzzword itself. Mm. But what did you implement through that time, or what did you change to start to really build that?
So I think that the one of the things that we did was we looked around the areas and sort of saw what the new patient experience was like, right? So not that we went into these practices, but I think the thing we looked at was how long are our competition's first visits? Because for me, one of the, you know, although I hated my first job, one of the things that I did learn over there was you spend an hour first visit, new patient consultation. You know, you might not end up even looking in the patient's mouth, but let's just get to know them first. Let's just try and build really good rapport. you know, get your examination done, take some good photos, and then the rest will sort itself out. So for me, it was all about building rapport at the beginning, you know, making sure we had friendly staff at the front, you know, making sure that, you know, and I think the concept that I used to talk to my staff at the beginning was, I want there to be a complex intermingling, you know, a web of relationships within the practice. So I don't want that patient to only have a relationship with me. I want them to have a relationship with you, my DA, you, my receptionist, even the other dentist, so that they're not, so the goodwill is not owned by me alone. I would like the practice value to go up rather than, you know, it being so key operator dependent, if you know what I mean.
That is an excellent way to put it and an excellent thing to employ. I think if it's all associated with one person, particularly if you're a business owner and then your associate has all the goodwill and they leave, it can really impact you. Obviously, as a business owner, you'll still be there. But if you want to go away, you want them to be able to see someone else and still be happy within the practice. They'll know the reception. They'll know the DA. They'll still be happy. That's a really good point.
Yeah, and I think we've struggled at times, because obviously, you know, I think the hardest thing about any business is staff, right? You know, managing people, getting them to buy into your culture, and you know, and all that. But I think it's still a journey in progress. I don't think I've perfected it. I started my journey in practice ownership with this grand idealistic, you know, notions of how a business should be run. But it's challenging, right? On a day-to-day basis, you go in and then, you know, there are some, you know, probably every second day I wake up and go, why the hell am I doing this? You know, I could have a much easier life if I just, you know, if I was an associate in a nice practice, walk in, everything's organized, and leave the headache to someone else.
Yeah, for sure. I did a lot of dental assisting before I got into dentistry, and I actually went towards dentistry because I like small business and dentistry. And then I got through dentistry, and then I realized that I don't really want the headache of small business for a little while yet. So I'm still an associate, and as much as I love the business side, I'll be an associate for a while yet, just to give me enough time to do a podcast. Actually, that's I don't have quite the 6-day work ethic that you've got going on. So tell us, what is your day like? What's your week like? How do you fit all this stuff in?
Okay, so typically, you know, on a Monday. On a Monday, I'm down for one day a week at my second practice, which is down south towards Wollongong. So I'm down there.
Okay. Can I ask what suburb that is?
That is in Thirroul.
Oh, cool. All right.
Yeah.
Are you nearby there? I'm fairly close to there. Yeah, in the Sydney parts, Heathcote, which is on the way down.
So. Oh, yeah, cool. So that practice has been a little bit of turmoil. We've had, you know, and this comes back to that idea of key, you know, key operator, you know, dependence, right? But you know, we had an amazing associate who had to move on last year, you know, for personal reasons. But essentially, that's why I've picked up another day down there. And I guess we've introduced a new grad dentist. My day on a Monday there is a more of a non-clinical day to make sure everything's running smoothly. You know, to hold my associate's hand if he needs any help, and sort of just make sure that everything is running okay. Because for most of the week, you know, for 4 of the 6 days that the practice is open, there's no owner there. It's all an associate dentist and a staff member. So that's what I do on a Monday. Now, on a Tuesday to Saturday, what do you want to know, David? Do you want to just know? Basically, it's wake up, go to work, cut some teeth, come home.
So you're a real life dentist Tuesday to Saturday. Basically doing a 6-day week. So 5 days are truly hands-on,
and
one day is a little bit more of the practice management side of things. How do you fit in the you do a lot of we'll talk about it later, but Instagram and sharing a lot of your content, and how do you do all that? Is that just after hours? Do you sleep?
Oh, I sleep a lot, David. I love my sleep.
So do I.
if you meet me on a day where I'm sleep deprived, good luck to you.
Yeah, fair enough.
No. I think for me, it's Instagram is one of those things I put in. You know, if I'm not cutting teeth, I'm probably always on Instagram. You know, it's about trying to engage that, you know, immediate your community there. In terms of posts, I think probably the most time-consuming thing when it comes to Instagram is probably, as you are aware as well, is posts and, you know, general content, isn't it? The uploading part doesn't really take long. So what you will probably find me is that most of my content is pre-planned. So because I do have a lot of documented cases on my hard drive, for me it's just a matter of sort of going into Keynote or PowerPoint and making and setting up my photos with watermarks and everything, and then having the captions saved in my, you know, in the notes section on my iPhone. So when it comes time to upload, all I've got to do is, and on my phone there's like a folder, you know, there's a, I'll show you here, David, if you can see here. You know, there's a folder called Instagram post with 99 photos there.
All right, so he's got a whole folder worth of stuff that we're about to see. If you go to Dr. Johan Choi on Instagram, you'll catch that stuff. And I'm sure most people would definitely know what you're talking about and what you're sharing with us. Mm. What about when you document a lot of cases for a couple of reasons. I know there's more to it with your master's as well, but can you walk us through how you document each of your cases? So the photography side of things, are you taking the photos? Is a staff member taking them? Are you degloving? How does that all work?
So for all of my posterior work, David, my DAs take my photos. So one of the first things that I train my new DAs in is how to take photos. And, you know, I know this may be a bit cruel, but, you know, most of my photos don't require a lot of cropping or rotation, because there is, like, especially when it comes to posterior photography, there is just a consistent angle that I want all of my photos to be at. So if typically, really, when it comes to posterior photography, it's really a matter of me just holding the mirror in the angle that I know is right. And then my trained associate just being able to come in with, you know, the focus on the camera preset. It's all manual. The settings are all done that I've selected. They've just got to come in and out, make sure the photo is focused, get the right angle and take the photo, right?
Awesome.
And at the beginning, I will make them take the same shot 5 times, 10 times, if I have to get them to take it, until the angle is perfect. And look, it takes time. So,
of course.
So for me, it's basically, you know, you know, I will typically pick maybe 1, 2, or 3 cases during the week where I say, you know, where I've screened the patient knowing that they can probably sit through a slightly longer appointment, that they're not going to be, you know, they're not going to get upset about me documenting my cases either, where they'll consent, because there's no point documenting a case and finding out that the patient's not going to consent for you to use it, you know, their photography, right? So I pick and choose who I'm going to document on, because sometimes the process of documenting a case for your patient can sometimes build rapport, I found, if you do it right patient. Yeah. Mm.
I've noticed they really appreciate it. They're like, wow, you want to take photos? Yeah, of course. And they want to help you help others or whatever you're doing. They like to help and give back. I found it good.
I think the key thing I found with that, you know, if people are interested in how you screen, my usual opinion is this. You know, if you think your patient is going to have to go out of the way a little bit as well to help you document the case, it comes down to finding people who are, you know, as you sort of, and I'm sure we all find out about this during our fireside chats at the beginning of our new patient interview. But, you know, when you talk to people and you find that certain people are truly, genuinely passionate about what they do, they love what they do, you know, and you can feel as though their passion is infectious. I think for us, you know, us documenting our work and being super passionate about what we do is that there's that rapport factor. Like that's an instant link where that patient's sort of looking at you going, cool, this guy really loves what he's doing. Like he must be good at what he does. Mm. You know, and I think
he must
can
care.
Be, yeah. So it's also a great tool in that regard anyway. But, you know, back to your original question, I keep getting sidetracked on all of your questions, David.
that's quite all right. We like the whole story. We want to hear all your thoughts. So go for it.
Yeah. So posterior photography for me, mostly, unless it's a really particular case where the mouth opening is a bit, you know, is a bit difficult for me that I have to take the photo. Usually it'll be, you know, my DAs will take the photo for me. Otherwise for anteriors.
Do you work with one DA?
Do you work
with one DA who, yeah, and she, so she, is she degloving, taking the photo, regloving and you're continuing? Is that how it works? Or do you have a bag over the camera?
It'll be a deglove situation. Sometimes when we're just really in a rush, they'll just use, because we're not really touching the the lens to focus, because
settings
it'll always
are all right.
Be
yeah.
So basically, it'll just be one handed. So we'll just wipe. So if I'm really in a rush, it'll be one handed on just this portion. Yeah.
Yep.
And we'll wipe it over. We'll wipe it over later. For interiors, I still take my photography all myself though.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. You do it all yourself. Is that because you just want the right angle, or is it just easier?
I find anterior photography, it's harder to get that consistent angle. There's a lot of variation because, you know, I think when it comes to posteriors, when you put the mirror inside your mouth, you're limited in terms of how many, where you can position the mirror. Typically, it's just a matter of getting the patient to open really wide, as wide as they can, putting the mirror in at a sort of a more obtuse, as obtuse an angle as you can to get, allow more light to get in, and you take the photo. Whereas interiors, you've got left to right variability. You've got up and down variability as well. And then a lot of the settings will change how the photo comes out, you know, in terms of your exposure. So I do like to play around with my settings a little bit when it comes to anterior photography. But I think one of the other reasons is that I think my staff struggle to take my anterior shots because the camera that I use for anterior photography is a bit bigger. It's a bit heavier with a big sort of twin flash setup.
Do you use twin flash for posterior or something else?
So I've got three cameras. I've got a narrow twin flash that I use occasionally, but my go-to cameras are a standard, actually a 200D 60mm lens and a ring flash with diffusers on my ring flash. So that's my standard for posteriors. I use that 80% of the time, and then all my interior work is done with the twins.
Yep. Mm. Yeah, that makes sense. Mm. So have you done quite a few photography courses to get up to speed on this?
So I was lucky to have like a small photography module with during my time at King's, because they needed to teach you how to take photos so you could document your work, right?
So that at the very start of that MClin Dent.
Yeah. But it's not it doesn't really teach you how to take artistic photography. It's just really how to take a photo, if you know what I mean. Yeah. My journey with photography, I think, has really been honed by talking to guys who are documenting their work on a daily basis already, David. You know, for me, it's, yeah. I'm sure
is
you that know
that
I'm
close. Yeah. I was like, going to say, is that through Instagram mostly? Your connections with those people?
Well, these guys, I think this was before I really got into Instagram. It was probably more like on Facebook where I happened to become, and now we've become really close friends. You know, you've probably heard of Barat, David, and Aiden.
And, certainly, yeah.
Yeah, and Barat and David have really shaped my photography. David, you've seen his stuff, right? He's a photography wizard, yeah. Isn't he? Absolutely. David, like, he's been nice enough to come from time to time, and he's like, tweak my setups. You know, he's like, bro, you know, you should be putting your flashes in this particular angle. And we've talked about settings. And look, it's still a journey. That's why my photography sometimes is a little bit inconsistent, because depending on how I feel that day, I'll be like, oh, well, I'm gonna give this a try. And that's why sometimes my photos might be a little bit overexposed on one day, a little bit underexposed on another day. But I'm still working it out. But look, for me, I think I probably could have gone around all of this a lot quicker if I just done a photography course, David, I think. But, you know, sometimes I'm a stickler for the challenge, right?
Yeah, fair enough. Like the long road. Well, I think having those people beside you who do know a little bit more, particularly that group of people, you're all just really doing great work and sharing great work as well, which is fantastic. Would you, I guess you could call them your mentors. And we're talking about mentorship before. Have you had many mentors through your time?
I think yes, I have had mentors throughout my career. It's one of those things where in some respects I sort of look at it and say I've never really had a true mentor, but there have been a lot of key people along my journey who have really, you know, sort of, if I've tried to veer off track, you know, they've given me a gentle nudge saying, hey, this is the path you should be taking, or people have like shaped my career. You know, I think for me though, you know, when I look back now, rather than calling them my mentors, I really hope that it's been a two-way street where it's been a mutually beneficial symbiotic relationship where we've truly benefited each other. You know, I'm not the type of person who likes to get help from one person and not be able to give something back. You know, for me, asking someone for help means that hopefully that I can truly genuinely offer them something as well. So a lot of the relationships that I've created, and I think this is we alluded to this earlier, didn't we, David? You know, in terms of, you know, get out there, and if you don't have traditional, you know, mentorship, there are other ways to get it nowadays. You know, people always comment on, oh yeah, your CPD is from the University of Instagram, and you know that stuff is, you know, is not too, you know, is not reliable. But you know, I think there are some really great people on the platform. You know, truly, yeah, there are some amazing guys. Yeah.
We can learn so much. Like, you know, particularly a couple of years ago, people would always, you know, put a lot down on learning from anything online. And I think no matter where we learn from, whether it's online or a real life CPD or with a university or not, we have to still critically analyze what we see and what we're thinking about. But we can learn so much, and particularly the simple stuff or simpler tips, not so much the academic stuff, from these platforms. It's huge. And I think all of us younger people have been mentored in a way by these people.
Yeah. And I think
you're one of them.
You know, yeah, I think it's really about sort of finding pages to follow or building connections with people, you know, where the work is not overly curated, if you know what I mean. You know, rather than the arty shots, you want it to be a glimpse or, a glimpse into their clinical lives, you know. And that's something that I've been trying to do a lot more lately with my stories, where I will actually post a case. You know, I don't think I can put that all into a post because that's far too much to organize. So my posts are more, you know, snapshots of various cases. But on my stories, you know, I'll do two or three a week where I'll basically take a case from start to finish. You know, we'll talk, we'll show like what I've done, you know, in terms of the preps, we've isolated, we've done the dry fit for, so yesterday's one was dry fit of ceramics, you know, sandblast the prep, make sure it's all clean and take, go through the whole thing. And I think it's just about being able to show that consistent journey. Like for me, you know, when I, you know, when we really got into social media with, you know, the four of us boys, we sort of said, hey, let's try and break down this old boys club where it's all smoke and mirrors, where, you know, essentially, excuse, you know, the lack of a better word, the dick measuring contest, right? Everyone wants to be definitely better than another. And we want to be above that. Like for us, like we're four guys who have been somewhat a little bit frustrated about that, you know, and we've really, you know, one of the main things when we you know, got close to each other and we tried to set something up was, well, we've got to change the culture. You know, it's, you know, my little sister is currently a dental student up at James Cook University. She's in third year, I think. but she's nearly halfway through her degree. And for me, it's like, you know, if, you know, for her coming into this, you know, this thing we call a profession, you know, I feel sorry that she has to come out at this time. So, you know, I think what we're trying to do is just do our little part to try and create a better environment for young people to come out and really have a go, be the best in this they can. I think ultimately that translates into better patient outcomes as well.
Definitely. It certainly does translate into better patient outcomes. And I think that's the end goal for all of people trying to teach, is help people get through in dentistry, and that helps patients. What you guys are doing in that regard, I think, is really admirable and really important. I agree, there's a bit of the culture in dentistry can be a little bit of an old boys club and you know, not much of a voice for the younger people. And I think what you're doing is really important with that change. It's really impressive. Mm. Just to reiterate, the four people who are doing that, so it's yourself, just go through them again. And myself, their Instagram as well.
Myself, Bharat. He's like dr.bharat.agrawal. Then you've got David Atiyah. I think he's dr.davidatiyah. And then you've got Aiden, who is Dr. Aiden. Aiden is a pretty face of the bunch. He's the one who is who's been on the morning show, you know, talking about, you know, oral hygiene with Pixters. You know, he's an amazing lad. You know, he's a super smart guy, Aiden. He won the university medal at UCID when he graduated, you know, and now he's working with Chris Ho. You know, Chris Ho. So he's destined for really awesome things, and I'm sure the other boys are as well. But it's a really good group, and I think, you know, look, I never imagined that I would, you know, be close friends with them. You know, we all come from different parts of, you know, different parts of Australia. We all went to different universities as well, except for David and Bharat, but they were in different years, and somehow through the power of Instagram, you know, we've all come together. You know, we're even going up to Aiden's wedding at the end of the year. So, you know, people sort of talk about, you know, well, you know, how true are these friendships that you make online? But, you know, it's a different world we live in. You know, as long as you can translate those online relationships to real world relationships, you know, there's nothing wrong with making friends. Mm.
Absolutely. And you can connect with people all over the world as well. So it's super important. It's super helpful. Let's get onto some of the stuff you did early on to get to where you are. And what I'm thinking about now is your, you know, CPD courses and things you did. Well, in a second, we'll get into the MClin dent that you are currently in. But what CPD did you do early on? What was good and what would you recommend avoiding?
So in my first year, probably the most insightful and impactful CPD that I did that year was Prime Speak. And
communication, no one says yes if you can't communicate what you're trying to get across, and you can't do good work if they're not saying yes to what you recommend. So communication is so critical. I fully agree.
Yeah, look, you know, there are some, you know, I've had some questions from new grads in the past, and they say, hey, I'm going to go up and do Lincoln Harris's full mouth rehab course. And you can automatically tell that they're not the world's best communicator. And my advice to them usually is, it might be a bit harsh, but I say, look, spend your money on communication first. You know, maybe do Prime Speak, maybe do something from Jesse Green or Marc Asad. There are a lot out there. And, you know, I say, if you can't effectively communicate the need for treatment and then effectively convey these are the solutions for treatment and these are the pros and cons of treatment and now this is what it's going to cost, you know, and be a bit of a showman on the side, they're not going to accept treatment. You know, you'll learn these skills, but you'll never do it. And what's the point?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So and I what's think the point?
Yeah, what's the point? So communication for me was a huge thing. I thought I was an okay communicator, but I thought Prime Speak really helped me structure the way I talk to my patients. And I've done some other things in between now and between then and now. To try and improve. I think communication for me is always one of those things where I'm trying to really actively improve on a daily basis. Your previous guest, Jamie Workman, I'm trying to convince him to give me some private lessons in NLP. I've always been super interested in NLP. So I think I'm meeting up with Jamie this week for him to maybe give me some insights into NLP and how we can really improve my communication one step further as well. But
that's awesome. I might get him on the podcast and he can train me publicly or something.
We'll make it a double one.
yeah. Perfect. So communication was key for you early on. I did the same thing. I focused on communication and basic dentistry early on, and I think that really helped me. I haven't actually done Prime Speak, but I plan to very soon.
Yeah.
So
Prime Speak was really good. I didn't do a huge amount of CPD in my first year. I think that really sort of for me related to finances. Because I was on a salary. You know, I was on a salary, and you know, half my salary was going to rent, and I didn't have a lot of money left over to sort of spend on CPD. So I did do a couple of things though at that time because I sort of managed to con mum and dad into paying for some CPD for me. But for me, I think I always thought from the beginning that you know how can you be good at the hard stuff if I am not even good at the small stuff. Like the thing that I really realized in my first 2 months of prior practice was that, yeah, I might have been good at doing a filling or be at clinical dentistry in uni, but now in the real world, I'm not good. You know, yes, I may be good compared to other new grads, but I'm not competing against a new grad anymore. I'm competing against the guys who've been out for 10, 15, 20 years. Like I have to deliver a result that's comparable at least. So
absolutely.
So for me, it was, you know, in my downtime, you know, and I think from what I heard from you, from one of your previous podcasts, Omar Ikram, you know, amazing endodontist, by the way. He really conveyed this message as well, didn't he? But it was in my downtime, I would have, you know, I would collect all of those extracted teeth, drill out huge cavities, and I would just go for them. I would just be doing composite after composite, you know, prep after prep. And just making sure I practice and practice and practice. And ultimately, I think that has, you know, helped me sort of develop some hand skills that I have now. You know, one guy that I'm super impressed with that I've been following his journey on Instagram lately as well is Bill Gurgis out of Adelaide. Gosh, like, because he's been, you know, we've been messaging back and forth for a while and seeing his work from just a few months ago and then me encouraging him to sort of go, well, you know, Bill, practice a bit more, do this, do that. And now he's doing work that's phenomenal. You know, and I'm going, well, holy shit.
Yeah, you know, wow. That's so awesome.
Your rate of progress, it's unbelievable. Like some of these young, like even younger guys coming out now, you know, unbelievably talented and unbelievably scary. So my first, you know, so for me, it's like, it doesn't mean that if you're not earning, you know, a load of money in your first year, you can still learn, make good contacts, you know, do make sure you spend some money on communication though, because I think most dentists, you know, we're the academic types and we suck at speaking and communicating to each other and patients. So do communication, you know, practice. You don't need to go attend fancy CPD to practice. You know, I'm sure a lot of us out there, you know, a lot of younger guys who have been through similar journeys are really happy to help as well. So, but ask the right questions.
Yeah, you know, that's it.
Ask for the right advice. That's the main point.
That's it. And don't ask the same question three times. But that's such a good point. You don't have to spend money to be learning, and particularly with our access to online, you know, things like or Instagram, YouTube, all the rest of it. Yeah, of course, you need to make sure you're learning from someone who knows what they're talking about. But you can then practice the technique on an extracted tooth. And that's a really good point. I think a lot of people sit there when they don't have a patient and whinge because they don't have a patient. But you can actually use that time. And this is what Omar was talking about and quite passionate about. You can use that time to grow yourself. And so it's not lost time. It can be very successful, useful time.
Like, time is money. Like, the thing is, you know, time is money. And if you're not making the most of it, you know, other people are going to be ahead of you. So the thing is, if you've got time, use it effectively. It doesn't even have to be in dentistry. Read a book, you know, develop yourself, yourself for experiences. You know, make friends, go talk to someone. Like, just you know, don't sort of waddle your thumbs and be like, why aren't I seeing any patients? You know, make the most of the time. So I think that's, but yeah, that, in terms of CPD, back to your original question, you know, sidetracked again, David. You know, I'd say, yeah, look, practice. Communication, super important. I think really focus that early education on simple stuff. So, you know, being able to do good, solid composite work that's well sealed. You know, you want to get predictable good contacts. If you want to do a little bit of layering, I think, you know, rather than learning the layering that, you know, is so artistic that you're going to need to spend 2 hours on one composite, learn stuff from guys who are doing that, you know, doing this work day in, day out in realistic time frames, because they've obviously got a formula, right? They've obviously got a simplified way of getting it to look decent. So I think, you know, if you want to get into some stuff, you know, stick to the basic stuff. Treatment planning, super important. Occlusion. But most of all, you know, I haven't done every single CPD program out there. I think one of the most important things is to probably talk to people, and not just one person, and not just the ones who are vocal on social media, but, you know, who are giving reviews for courses. But ask around and see if you can get an honest, off the record review of what a specific course was like. Because trust me, I've been to some courses and the reviews on DPR have been amazing and the courses are not that crash hot.
Yeah, I think a review that's privately shared is always a more valuable review. Not that anyone's biased, but we're not going to place a review if it's bad. So therefore, you only see good. With CPD, you went from doing, you know, a lot, early on, you didn't do a lot of courses, you did a lot of practice, you did communication, you started doing more and more courses, but then you got yourself into a Masters of Clinical Dentistry with King's College in fixed and removable pros. Where are you up to with that at the moment?
So I finished my third year of my degree last year. It's a four-year degree, and then I was supposed to be writing my thesis this year, David, but I've had too much going on, so I've taken the year off this year.
Cool. All right. Yeah. So that's just a deferment of 1 year.
Yes, deferment of. Yeah. Hopefully, it's only 1 year. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking, and you're one of the busiest people I think I've ever met, by the sounds of it, with what you're doing. You know, you're juggling quite a few balls, and you're clearly doing a good job at that. But I was wondering how you did it. Tell us a little bit about that. Just there's a people out there who are interested. We won't go too deep on this. If you do want to hear more, Johan did talk with Amir Azami on the Newbie Dentist podcast and dove a little deeper on this stuff. But just tell us quickly, what is the MClindent? What did you think about it so far? Has it been beneficial?
Okay. So I think the MClindent for me was really about having a structured pathway for education. Although I said I didn't do too much CPD, I did do a fair bit in my I did do a fair bit though. And having said that, the reason why I haven't really talked about anything else was that I didn't really think it was that crash hot. Okay. So for me, it was really about then saying, hey, well, you know, a lot of these private courses are not that great. So if I can get into something that's a bit more structured, that's evidence-based through a reputable institution, you know, what's better than that? No degree is perfect. I think, you know, going into something like King's, you know, this the master's programs, through King's or any other institution, what you need to realize is that a lot of people, I think, go in thinking this work is going to, this course or this program is going to make my work really sexy. I'm going to be an instadontist or whatever.
Yeah.
However, that's not the purpose of these institutional programs. You know, these programs are really about getting you to treatment plan well, do ethically, and minimally invasive, ethically responsible and minimally invasive dentistry. And it's typically not the sexy dentistry you see on social media, but it's essential dentistry that is super important and it will make you a good, all-rounded clinician. I think the other thing that, is super great on these programs as well is that you meet a lot of like-minded professionals from all over the world. You won't be friends with every person on the course because you don't see them that regularly, but you make some really great friends. We've made a really great friend, a couple of really good mates in London, a couple of really good mates, even in India of all places,
I never knew
I would have an Indian local as a friend. So, it gives you some really nice opportunities, but look, there's a lot of hard work, with these degrees. Dr. Christopher Ho, he gave me some really good advice at the before I started, because I asked him how the course was like. And his advice to me was, it's really easy to pass the course. It's really easy to get through. But if you really wanted to benefit your career and have an impact on your career, it's about you putting the hard work in. Like the outcome will be, dependent on how much effort you've put in. So I guess that's the thing. No postgrad degree is going to spoon feed you anymore. Very independent. They have like the minimal criteria, and then they'll have recommended reading and they'll have general topics, but it's really up to you to go and get all the information out there on that topic. It's not like it's not as though your professor is going to be giving you lecture slides on a topic and saying, hey, all you need to learn is this and you'll be sweet. It's very different to that. So I guess know exactly what you're getting into would be my main message, because if you're more interested in just the clinical side of things, then there are probably other courses out there now that where you can probably learn the skills that you want to learn. Yeah.
It sounds like with particularly the MClin Dent's very or quite academic as well. So you've got to put in a lot of effort to research to find all the information. But I think with any CPD, you get what you put in the same regard. So it's easy to go to CPD and just to go through the process, sit there and drink a lot of coffee and go back to work and not really apply it. But you've got to have a more structured mindset, in my opinion, when you go to CPD to actually get a lot out of it. It's something I learned by, going and then thinking, oh, I didn't really get a lot out of that. And then in reflection, I realized it's more because I didn't apply it myself. All right. So you've done a lot of CPD. You've been doing the MClin Dent. And now you're actually running your own course. So you're talking about, getting the basics of composite, doing good dentistry that works, it's comfortable, that there's no sensitivity, and composite work is our bread and butter. So yourself and Bharat are actually running a course or have been running a course on this. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, so we've run it three times now. It's been one of those things where we thought there was a gap in the market where there weren't any beginner level composite courses.
Yeah, I love that you're doing that and aiming there, because I think that's exactly what a lot of people are looking for and a lot of people need as well.
I think the way we've structured the course is that, Bharat's a little bit more experienced. He's a couple more years out than I am. But, I think both of us really remember being young guys. We remember what we wanted, what questions we had when we were a new grad and a recent grad. So I think we've really structured our course in that way. We just wanted to talk about, predictable techniques. We've run a one-day course. Our current offering was a one-day course. We've got another one up in Brisbane at the end of August, which I think is actually sold out already. But
good.
We will probably start offering a two-day course next year. One of the biggest pieces of feedback we got this year was the course was too short. Like we want to share so much, but there's limited time to get through it all. So I think we'll just break it, slow it right down. So if anyone is interested, just let me know and we'll provide details as we move forward.
Do you have a sign-up form that people can get their name on so that when this course is out, they can be contacted?
Yes. Yeah, so basically, I think at this stage, if you want to ask, the easiest way is probably going to be to either email Bharat or I, or DM us on Instagram, because we're most active in responding to those messages. Our events are typically sold through dentevents.com.au, I think that's the site. Yep. So we typically sell through there. The Brisbane one is sold out, but there, you know, if anyone drops out from Brisbane, you know, we'll be able to fill those spaces in. We haven't launched any pages for our first course next year probably will be in Melbourne, but we haven't launched anything yet. But I'll post something on social media once the details are sorted.
Definitely. When I see that, I'll share that. Or if you can, you could share that on the Dental Head Start stuff as well. Now, that's called Stratum BXY. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Awesome. It sounds like a really cool course. I haven't done it. I'd love to. Maybe I'll be there next year for the 2-day. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, you're always welcome, Ben.
Appreciate it. So with the course, you obviously share a lot of tips. You bring a lot into that course. You might be expanding it into 2 days. Composite tips, personally, I'd love to hear. What do you think? Well, just give us one or two little tips for young dentists placing composites, wanting them to look a little bit nicer, a little bit more anatomy. What are things you see people making mistakes with that they can improve?
I think one of the biggest things is that, you know, if you want something to look like a tooth, you need to know how a tooth is, like the properties of a tooth. Yeah, so you need to look at, you know, I think when we talk about composite, it's more, you know, if everything, we talk about morphology, the shape, and if the shape is wrong, then the shade is not going to help you. So the shape comes first, and then the shade, you need to understand how a tooth is layered. So typically, you know, for example, the dentine is going to give you the chroma of your tooth, the saturation of the color. And also, you know, we need to understand the age-related changes of teeth in terms of, you know, how the opacity and the opacity and the value change, you know, with age. So end of the day, we'll talk a bit more about this on our course. But essentially, you know, the biggest tip I can give is layer a tooth like a tooth. You know, make sure the dentine replacement is a dentine replacement, so it's giving you the ideal chroma, and your enamel on top is modulating the value properly to give you those optical effects. If that's passed over most people's heads, basically my advice is, you know, most modern good composites are pretty much the same. You know, they're all very good. A lot of them, you know, nowadays will either be micro hybrids or nano hybrids. I feel very comfortable picking up a new composite system nowadays and being able to achieve, as long as I know the shading system roughly, of being able to achieve a pretty good result on my first time using a different composite system. So my main piece of advice is, you know how a tooth is supposed to look like. And so know the shade, know how a tooth should be layered, and then know your composite system.
Yeah, that's definitely good advice. We had a few questions on Instagram, at leemathieu.blog. They had a few questions. They wanted to know a bit more about photography, and we covered that before, but they also wanted to know a little bit about your tips with using rubber dam. I know these guys, guy and girl, are in uni still, so rubber dam can be a little bit of a daunting thing. What tips do you have for using rubber dam to make it easier or more effective for people?
So if you're in university, the main tip that I can give is probably not as useful. But one of the main tips is I have my favorite rubber dams, you know, that I like to use in practice. They are Isodam and Nictone. If, you know, Isodam, for most people use it, you've used it, David. Have you?
I use a not so good one, actually. And I'd like to change that soon. I am an associate.
So for me, Isodam is one of those things which will automatically improve your experience with rubber dam overnight. You know, follow the generic rules. You know, I think a lot of us, when we have a period in our lives where we start using rubber dam and we think we're really good at using rubber dam, and we stop using the template.
Yeah.
just use a template, because the whole sizing is the whole positions are usually pretty much spot on as long for a normal dentition. Follow the general rules for general rules for soles size, hole sizing, and it all comes down to clamp selection. It's a tough question to answer, you know, immediately, but basically that,
it's a very hands-on thing to answer, isn't it? You can show and you can, you know, walk people through this a little easier than just talking about it. So that's a good tip, though. Using good quality rubber dam will make it easier as well.
Much easier. Yeah, definitely.
All right. So let's start to wrap things up. I like to ask you pretty much to go back, and we kind of already have, but to go back to your time when you're a dental student, and then just about to graduate, what would you like to tell yourself? What would you, you know, want to improve or change for yourself back then?
Attend more lectures.
Okay. But would you have listened?
Probably not. I think, look, the biggest thing that I would tell myself now, as you know, and anyone else who's in that situation now, would be slow down. It's not a race, you know, and be genuinely open to learning, you know, with you know, and be, you know, be humble, modest, and you know, and don't be an arrogant fool.
Like, well summed up, I think. Well summed up. What do you think with the dental industry? We were talking before about how the culture of the industry can be a little bit daunting for younger graduates. What do you think the future holds with the industry and the way that'll go for people, the collegiality of it, and you know, support for younger people? Do you foresee that changing? Obviously, you're trying to make changes. What do you see happening?
Well, I think it is slowly changing, David. And the thing is, it's an interesting question you pose, because I think the change is really dependent on these young guys coming out, David. You know, are they just going to follow in the footsteps of the way all other dentists before us have? Or are we really going to come together and do something different? So the thing is, for us, you know, I think there should be a lot more events for younger grads, you know, and I think if any of your listeners want to come and say hi, they recognize me at any of the things, and I'd be more than happy to have a chat, give some advice, you know, and chat to them. But I think when it comes to this industry, I think it's about for us banding together, you know, banding together and being the change that the industry needs. You know, I guess that's a vague answer, but I think that's probably the best answer I can give at this stage. But having said that, you know, the change isn't being unnoticed, because even the industry itself, you know, in terms of industry partners, they can sense that a big change is coming. So, you know, my advice to your young listeners out there as well would be, you know, start your social media profiles. It's not about showing off sexy work. It's about sharing that journey. You know, it's about being relatable, because what sells on Instagram is the journey, not a snapshot, not a curated picture of your life.
That's so true. Like you were talking about with your stories just recently, I saw the one yesterday actually, and you went through every single step in a story, and that is so valuable. That's something that people want to see, and that's something that you know, people actually look at. It's so important. I think the other thing with the way the industry, I guess the culture is going, is it's much easier to reach out as well. And I encourage people to reach out to those that they you know, they admire, or people doing work they like, or you know, even people like me who I'm not doing the work you're doing, I'm just trying to, I don't know, disseminate information, but reach out, ask questions, become, you know, colleagues and friends, and we can, you know, working together, we can change, I guess, change
most
the
of
industry.
Us, like, I'm sure, David, like most of us, like you and I, and I'm sure most of our colleagues, we're super happy to answer questions, aren't we? You know, we generally want, you know, a better future for this industry. And I guess it's just like trying to get everyone on board. But look, I'm very optimistic. You know, I think even the last couple of years, I can sense things are changing. It'll take a bit more time. But, you know, we definitely, I think, you know, we're in for hopefully a better future for a profession.
Yeah, I think my podcast shows that people are willing to put their time aside, because someone like yourself has sat with us today for a bit over an hour to share your story, and I very much appreciate it. And we've had many others do that, and many in the future will. So it's a really great thing. I appreciate what you do, what you share on Instagram. I think you're doing excellent work, and it's quite inspiring. And I look forward to one day doing your course and seeing where you go with this, because you're still quite young. You've got quite a few years of your career to go, and I look forward to seeing where that ends up. So thank you for your time today, Dr. Johan Choi.
Thank you so much for having me, David. It was an absolute pleasure.
All right, we're back. That was Dr. Johan Choi. Great chat, great guy, doing some really great work. Check him out on Instagram at dr.johanchoi. I really love his tip where if you've got some spare time, get some composite, start playing around, build some teeth up, extracted teeth, and you get a better idea of the anatomy and what the tooth really should look like. I must admit, I really do want to do his course, and I haven't done it yet. I'm not saying that because he asked me to or any other reason. It's purely because He does some amazing work, and it would be nice to know how. This week, I wrote a blog that I think is pretty important for everyone to hear. It's that not every patient needs to like you, and that's more my opinion than anything else, but we did a podcast a little while ago with Dr. Jamie Workman, and he was talking about the different personalities and the way different personalities gel, or the way you communicate with different people will be more or less effective depending on their personality. There are patients that come and see me that I can tell I'm just not the dentist for them, and I think that's my technique, my personality, and I also think that's fine. And I think if we always feel that we have to have everyone love us, then we put too much pressure on ourselves. We put too much stress on ourselves. And those difficult patients that you can tell that you just don't gel with can put a dampener on our whole day. I work in a fairly large practice and there's a few different dentists. I've already noticed that my patients are different to other dentists' patients. And we all, our personalities attract a certain person. So in the end, just be yourself. As Dr. Stephen Durgin said on our last podcast, you are the best version of you. 95% of patients will love you, and 5%, they'll find another dentist that they really like. So thanks for listening, and thank you to DPL for their support, as well as BOQ specialists who have just come on. We've got some plans with Dental Head Start and our industry partners, and we're excited what this can do for the dental community. And we love hearing your feedback. Let us know on Instagram, Facebook, and via the email and website. For now, we look forward to the next episode.